I promised my 8-year-old daughter Stella a toy if she behaved at her doctor's appointment. She has a history of throwing fits at the doctor, so I was trying to avoid a tantrum. It worked. Stella was a little angel for the doctor. She didn't even cry when she received her vaccines. Following the appointment, we headed to Target to get her toy and a few other things we needed. She was a jumping bean of excitement. So we went to the toy section first. I gave her a $15 budget and told her to pick whatever she wanted while praising her good behavior. Stella scanned the shelves carefully, not wanting to squander this opportunity, until she found a brown animatronic pirate bear. It was a fluffy bear dressed as a pirate with an eye patch and a hook for a hand. Just looking into its one good pitch black eye gave me the creeps. "Are you sure you want this one, honey?" I asked her. "You know, maybe we should increase the budget to $20 and then you can get a new Barbie." Stella insisted on the bear. My husband, her father, had just watched Pirates of the Caribbean with her, so she was on a big pirate kick. Although I wanted to pick something else, I didn't fight her. We threw the pirate bear into the cart and headed to the cleaning supplies. Stella wanted to hold the bear as we walked through Target, so I let her. She kept pressing the button to see everything the bear could say. It first said, "Can you keep a secret?" and something else about the Pirate Code of Honor. Knowing a little bit about pirate history, I thought the idea they had a code of honor was a little funny. It was just a toy, though. It didn't need to be historically accurate. When we got home, her dad helped her remove the bear from the package. It came with a controller so she could control its movements. It was a pretty nifty thing for only $13. The bear quickly became Stella's favorite toy. She named it Mr. Fizzles. We would hear Stella and Mr. Fizzles having entire conversations. She wanted to bring it everywhere, even to school, but we told her Mr. Fizzles had to stay at home. We let her take it on a playdate, and that is where the troubles began. I dropped her off at a friend's, and when I came to pick her up, her friend's mom, Becky, said she needed to talk to me. She seemed concerned. Becky explained she had walked in on Stella and her friend wrestling. At first, I laughed it off as odd, but kids want to try new things, so nothing too out of the ordinary was there. Becky continued. She said it didn't appear to be play wrestling. She walked into the room with Stella holding her daughter in a chokehold, tapping Stella's arm to release her. The mom told Stella to release her daughter, and Stella listened. Becky said, "If I didn't walk in when I did, I don't know if Stella would have let my daughter go. I'm scared, which is why I'm telling you I'm concerned." She then asked the girls for an explanation of what happened. Becky said Stella was visibly annoyed and frustrated that her daughter was so forthcoming with information. According to her daughter, Mr. Fizzle suggested a new game for them to try, but they had to promise to keep it a secret. At one point, Stella snapped at her friend, saying something about the pirate code. And her friend said, "It's a toy, it's not real." I agreed with the mom that it was weird and concerning. Stella had never been so aggressive before. I apologized for Stella's behavior and promised to talk to her about the incident and whatever happened with Mr. Fizzles. When Stella came out of the house, I could tell she had been crying. I wondered if she was embarrassed, but after talking to her in the car, it was apparently something Mr. Fizzles said. Stella said he scolded her for breaking the pirate code. I assumed she was just playing make-believe, and maybe it started feeling a little too real for her. I asked her about the wrestling incident, and Stella refused to talk about it. "Honey, Miss Jones said that you were s***ing your friend. Can we talk about it?" Stella responded, "I don't know what she's talking about." "I know you're lying to me. Miss Jones told me about it. I want to give you a chance to tell your side before Daddy and I discuss the consequences. It's not okay to do that to someone. She could have been seriously hurt." "I said I don't know what she's talking about," Stella said angrily. She brought Mr. Fizzles to her chest in a hug. The rest of the ride home was quiet. Her dad and I talked about it, and neither of us knew what to do. Stella had never been violent before. She never had an interest in combat, of all things. "Maybe the pirate stuff is driving her nuts. They were known to be brutal," I suggested to my husband. "Let's take Mr. Fizzles for a couple of days, and maybe the pirate obsession will wear off some." I also don't love that the toy is encouraging her to keep secrets. That's the part that's really upsetting me. Stella refused to tell me what happened, and I think it's because one of the things Mr. Fizzle says is, "Can you keep a secret?" My husband agreed that it was a good idea. The next morning at breakfast, we explained to Stella that we would hold on to Mr. Fizzle's for a couple of days. We expected a strong reaction, but it was nowhere near as intense as Stella's. She threw her plate across the room at the news and started crying. "You'll get him back in a couple of days. We just think you two need some space." "No!" Stella screamed. She ran to her room and slammed the door. We looked at each other and agreed to give her some time to calm down before taking Mr. Fizzle's. After about 30 minutes, I approached her room to confiscate the bear. When I was about to open the door, I could have sworn I heard Mr. Fizzle say,
"It'll be okay, Stella."
I assumed I was just hearing things. I lightly knocked on her door and she opened it. I asked for Mr. Fizzle's and she handed him to me. I thanked her for complying. I walked to my closet and put Mr. Fizzle's on the top shelf where Stella couldn't reach him. As I started to exit, I thought I heard Mr. Fizzle say,
"Big mistake."
I turned around and looked at the bear. Its one black eye stared back at me. I picked it off the shelf and pressed the button on its hand, which caused it to speak.
"Arrgh!"
Assuming again I was hearing things, I put the bear back. I almost thought I heard the bear laughing as I closed the closet door. I talked to my husband about it, and he suggested that maybe I was just upset and stressed by Stella's acting out. That made sense, so I tried to not think about it. That night, we were awakened by Stella standing at the foot of our bed, her eyes wide with pure anger.
"Stella, baby," my husband said, "what are you doing?"
Stella could barely respond because she was crying so hard. She sniffled out,
"I'm here for Mr. Fizzle's."
My husband and I looked at each other. He then got up and took her back to her room. While he talked to her, I couldn't help but cry. What was happening to my once peaceful daughter? Where was all this coming from? I was beginning to grow scared she may need therapy. My husband returned and brought out Mr. Fizzle's. He looked at the bear closely under the light.
"Oh, God,"
he exclaimed. Before I could ask what was going on, he turned the bear over and ripped it open. He stripped the toy until all we were left with was the robot. He looked at me and could tell I was confused and horrified.
"I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist," he said, "but I wonder if someone has been controlling Mr. Fizzle's and talking to our daughter through him. If you look at his eye in the light, you can see it's a camera."
I wanted to vomit. "I'll take it apart and see if I can figure it out. That eye is definitely a camera, though." My husband is a software engineer with a robotics hobby, so I nodded and let him do his thing. He stayed up all night tinkering with Mr. Fizzle's. The next morning, my husband stopped me before going down for breakfast.
"I think we need to talk to the authorities about this. I found a transmission so someone, God knows where, could control its movements. They could even talk through the bear. I'll go to the police station later today to tell them what I found."
"So Stella isn't crazy?" I asked.
"No, but it looks like she's been talking to someone. Some creep has been talking to her, and that's where the aggressive behavior came from."
I grabbed my heart.
"Oh my," I said.
"We'll tell her Mr. Fizzle's left because his friends called him. From some of the things she said, I'm confident she'll buy it." He was right. Stella was sad about her friend departing, but she said something like he had a lot of responsibilities, so she understood. The police said they couldn't trace the transmission to anything, so there wasn't anything they could do. They suggested reaching out to the toy company to alert them. We were unsure if we just got a bad bear or if it was all the pirate bears, so we emailed the company, doubting we'd hear back. And we never did.
My name is Penny. I was a secretary for most of my life, but when my husband Jackson found out he was going to get a promotion at work, I was able to quit my job and write mystery novels full-time. It was what I had always wanted to do with my life. I self-published my first book years ago, but it didn't sell a lot of copies. Jackson was extremely supportive, but I felt like a real failure. I swore to myself that my next book would be different. So as I was writing, I did a lot of research on marketing and sales.
I watched some YouTube videos by some other mystery writers, and I took a lot of notes. Around the time I finished writing my new book, Jackson had officially gotten his promotion. I had more money to spend on advertising, but I also needed to put in the work. I created a website and some social media accounts. Most importantly, I created a TikTok. One of the authors I followed said that the majority of her sales came from her TikTok followers. I had no idea how to use the platform, but I wouldn't let that stop me. I set up my camera outside the house and wrote a short speech to introduce myself. I practiced a few times and then filmed it. It took me an hour to make a 1-minute video, but I was pretty happy with the results. I posted it and shared the link on my new socials. At the end of the day, I had less than 20 views and very little engagement. It was a total failure, so I decided to go off script and film another video outside the house. This one was just me talking about how much I love murder mysteries. I was a lot more passionate in this one, but the view count was still really low. I was about to give up on the whole TikTok experiment until I looked at my phone the next morning and saw that my second video had gone viral. I couldn't believe it. Over one night, I went from 10 views to a couple hundred thousand. I wanted to tell Jackson the good news, but he had already left for the day. So I fixed my morning coffee and started to look through all the comments. Right away, I realized that something was wrong. People were writing things like, "This can't be real," and "Did anyone else see that?" I didn't get it. I kept scrolling until I found one comment that really struck me. The body looks so realistic. I rewatched the video to figure out what was going on, and I didn't see anything strange. It was just me looking into the camera with our little garden and tool shed in the background. Then about halfway through, I saw movement in the background. So I started from the beginning and watched again. That's when I saw what everyone was talking about. When I filmed my video, Jackson was in the far background. He was dragging a dead body from the house to the tool shed. It was too far away to see clearly, but it looked like an overweight man in a business suit. He pulled the body behind the tool shed, then reappeared to grab a shovel. Before I could see what he'd do next, the video ended. My video had accidentally captured my husband burying a body. No wonder it went viral. People thought it was all a setup to help me sell my murder mystery books. It took me a while to really grapple with what this meant. Jackson was a killer. My husband of 8 years, the love of my life, was a killer. I didn't call the police, even though I should have. I had to see for myself first. So I checked the garage to make sure Jackson's car was gone, and then I nervously walked toward the tool shed. The shovel Jackson had used was still leaning against the wall. I grabbed it and started digging. It didn't take me long to hit something. Covering my mouth, I scooped up enough dirt to find the body. It was Mr. Billings, the man who used to have Jackson's job. Is that why he'd been promoted? Because he had killed the guy above him? I tried to think back to when Jackson had told me about his promotion. He said that Mr. Billings had moved away. Obviously, he was lying. Horrified, I ran back inside the house and started to call the police. "Honey, what's going on?" I spun around to see Jackson standing behind me. I didn't hear him come back. "Nothing," I lied. "Aren't you supposed to be at work?" He explained that he came back to pick up some papers, but as he was talking, I could see him studying my expression. He was trying to figure out if I was onto him. His smile instantly disappeared when he had his answer. "I did it for you," he said. "What?" Jackson explained that his company had taken away his promotion when Mr. Billings decided to stay on for another 5 years. I had already quit my job, and he didn't have the heart to tell me we didn't have enough money, so he decided to make sure his promotion went through. It was disgusting. I'd never seen the side of my husband before, and I felt like throwing up. He stepped closer. "How did you find out?" I muttered one word. TikTok. I don't know why I told him that. It just came out. Frantically, Jackson grabbed the phone from my hands before I could finish dialing 911. He opened my TikTok. I tried to pull the phone out of his hands, but he pushed me back. I fell onto the ground and my phone slid under the couch.
Don't hurt me! I screamed. He stood over me, his eyes red and crazed.
I'm not a bad person.
You killed someone!
He laughed coldly. Then he asked if I was going to say anything.
I have to, I told him. People already saw you. It's on the internet now.
Wrong answer.
He dove on top of me. His hands reached around my neck. He squeezed. Don't, I sputtered. Please.
He didn't look like my husband anymore. He looked like a total stranger. He squeezed so hard, everything was turning black. I knew I was going to die. I didn't, though. I just passed out. But when I woke up, I was tied to the couch. Jackson stood in front of me, waiting for me to wake up. He said he wasn't going to let me go until I promised to keep his secret. He'd gotten away with the perfect murder, and he couldn't let me get in the way. I begged him to reconsider. I knew he still loved me. He had to. He slowly, calmly explained everything he'd done to Mr. Billings, all the ways he was able to cover his tracks, and he reminded me over and over that he did it for us. There was nothing I could say to reason with him. Something had snapped in his brain. I felt completely hopeless. Finally, I said, "Just kill me then. I'd rather be dead than married to a murderer." He laughed once, and then he pulled a knife from his pocket. The same knife he'd used to kill Mr. Billings. He stepped closer, eyes wide. But before he could hurt me, the front door burst open and a bunch of cops rushed in. Jackson didn't put up much of a fight as they'd held him down and handcuffed him. One of the cops untied my ropes.
"How did you find me?"
I asked.
"We got dozens of calls from your TikTok fans," he answered.
With my hands untied, I reached under the couch and pulled out my phone. My phone was in the middle of live streaming. It had recorded the audio of everything that had happened. I guess one of us had pressed the record button when Jackson and I were fighting over the phone. I looked directly into the camera at my thousands of new followers and I said,
"Thanks. I promise you, my new book will be just as exciting."
I tried to ignore the lady in the yellow dress and flat-soled shoes as I shopped, but there was something unsettling about a stranger staring at you in a Target while you're shopping for groceries. I changed aisles, stared away from her on purpose so that we would have no reason to interact, as I felt too much expiration in me from long hours of working at night to interact with anyone at Target. But her staring was persistent, following me everywhere I went, until I was forced to confront her. I drifted to her as stealthily as I could, careful not to disturb the other shoppers, but realizing I would have to be loud if I was suddenly in any form of danger. When we were closer, I perceived a strangely familiar smell from her, which sent my brain into this familiar sense of remembrance. My brows fell into the middle, and my scowl eased when I saw that this stranger smiled at me. "Excuse me, miss, do I know you?" I asked in hushed tones, just around the aisle from the toilets. I was not aware of the large Target signpost just above my head, so I moved from underneath it as she spoke. "Do you?" she asked in return with a casual shrug. Her eyes were bright, almost in humor, and this confused me, as I was sure I didn't have any relationships with this stranger before. A prank. A bitter pool flooded my mouth as I looked over my shoulder to search for any hidden camera that could be used to be set up to capture my reaction to amused audiences. I found nothing. "You seriously do not remember me, Emily?" she said, and my heart sank when I saw that her face was no longer with a grin, but with the look of dejection. She knew my name. I was curious now. She squared up, and her smile started to creep back with a hint of knowing. My obliviousness made me uncomfortable. She put me out of my torture with one word, and it dropped me into terror. Barbara. The words rolled off her lips. Suddenly, all at once, old memories flickered. Forgotten thoughts that I had long been detached from as I grew older started back into my mind. I stuttered an incoherent phrase. I looked around and it suddenly felt like we were alone in the aisle. The loneliness seeped into all parts of the store, and I was horrified that 23 years after college, Barbara still remembered me. I gulped with difficulty, horror causing my eyes to glaze with tears. I recalled the last time I was trapped by her into that confinement of our room in college. All that cryptic sermon about sacrifice of my life and the lingering fear that I had to battle for years after she stabbed my chest with the poking knife. Pieces of my life had fallen into better places since then, but the picture of chilling manipulation emerged with a rush. Seeing her again felt as though I had betrayed myself a second time. "Stay away from me, Barbara," I cried as I stumbled backwards. She ignored my frantic warnings and instead marched with me, ever so stoic and hypnotic, her eyebrows flattened in relaxation. I cried out for help, knowing that somewhere in a large store someone would hear me out and do something about it. But my feet failed me when I tried to run. It felt like a terrible dream that I willed myself to be awoken from. I was on the floor, incapable of bringing myself back to my feet as Barbara approached me, intrigued by her own conviction. Perhaps she saw in me the little naive girl that she manipulated into a death pack, one that she could finish her twisted fantasies on, the same that she had started over 2 decades ago. "You owe your life to me, Emily. Don't you see that you never really escaped it?" she said to me with an unsettling whisper as she grabbed an item from the rack. My eyes followed her movement, and I saw that it was a thin rope that she had picked. My dread heightened. My life flashed before my eyes, and my entire body was numb from this confrontation, which I wanted no part in. I turned over on the floor and buried my head in my hands to cast away this nightmare, wishing that I would just wake up in some different world. I sensed the futility of my wishes when Barbara's breath hit the back of my neck, the damp feeling of the rope eating into the neck of my skin. I withdrew my hands from my face, and I was suddenly aware of how soaked my eyes had become from crying. My lips parted, and I started to sob out loud, offering pleas to her for mercy. Minutes passed into a blur of anxious waiting for salvation that I no longer had hopes for. I surrendered to the terror of death when I saw its hands reach for me from the darkest recesses of my fear. My mind replayed every interaction that I had in a fast-moving reel, and it was strange to experience them all as I fully enveloped into what was happening. I gasped for air, and my ears felt as though they would explode from the rush of blood going to my head. "Please, Barbara, stop," I sobbed. She hushed me and told me that my sacrifice was necessary. She tightened the rope. I simply hoped at that point for a quick death. I was surprisingly aware of what the news might read. Lady found strangled to death in retail store. I was going through every thought in my head when suddenly I heard the sound of something bang behind me. The rope around my neck suddenly felt loose, and I coughed up in a violent fit as I scrambled blindly away from my attacker. 2 strangers, a man and a woman, suddenly appeared in front of me. The man appeared to pin Barbara to the floor, while the woman rushed to my side with her hands held up to show me that she meant no harm. When I allowed myself to rest by her shoulder, she spoke. "Ma'am, are you okay?" "Ma'am," she asked me. I was so dizzy from the attack that it took me a minute to realize that they were police. I burst into tears. I looked around and I found Barbara under the weight of the man's knee, with both her hands behind her back. Barbara looked remorseful, just as she had when she made me deny that she hurt me back in college. I had gotten her off the hooks that time, but this time I would not lie to let her escape the law a second time. I knew I had to save myself from this psychopath. She tried to kill me, I confessed. Immediately, Barbara was placed under arrest and handcuffed. Taken away, with my terror ended.